Yes, thank you.
Just in time.
Just with regards to the code amendment down south, I'd prefer to make a perceived conflict of interest because my home lives there. And just based on what we've done previously, perceived conflict of interest because my home is in that area.
Yes, you're aware, as we all are, of the exemption where a motion affects a substantial part of the community, which I expect would cover that, but it is indeed a matter of your choice, and that'll be noted. Any other items? All right, otherwise we'll come to them as we come to them. We proceed straight to a deputation in relation to the Marion Cultural Centre Plaza plan. And Mr. Watts is online to give his deputation. So now I can't actually see him. How will I know that he can hear the mayor?
Just wait one moment.
Yes, I can see Mr. Watts now on our screen, and he's waving in acknowledgement, so it's good. So, Mr. Watts, you have 5 minutes. You know how the deputation process works. If we finish early, there might be time for questions if people have any. So please proceed, and we'll hope the technology works. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Worship, and good evening, members. I appreciate this time with you and experience or know what you're going through. My concern is with the proposed consultation that with the Marion Cultural Centre Plaza. As you know, 20 odd years ago, I was very involved with this, but now it's even more so. It is really affecting my life because, as you know, I live on Diagonal Road right opposite, and Diagonal Road opposite the swimming pool is a dual highway, and getting in and out of my home requires some turns to go northwards, or even it means that when I leave my house I can only go to the left, and to get onto Morfitt Road I need this intersection either to go down past the cultural centre, past the plaza, or do a U-turn back onto to get to Morfitt Road and the station area. It affects not only myself, but at least 12 other residents along my street, along Diagonal Road. They were to be contacted via the city limits. And as many of you know, city limits don't always get delivered to your letterbox. After complaining last Monday, we did get them delivered on the Wednesday, which happened to be the final day of consultation. But to your credit, they did extend that for a week, the consultation period for a week. What I want to talk to you about is, I've given you a three-page letter, but I just wanted to emphasise some matters. When the consultant actually gave this report, it does affect a lot of people. As a butterfly in the Amazon flaps its wings, it does affect the whole planet. The consultants did consult with the swimming pool people when they bus in the children for swimming lessons. Therefore, they decided to have one way out only. So they did do some consulting, but not consulting. Probably they didn't even realise that the residents would be affected on the other side of the road. So what I'm saying is, please leave the road open in both directions. As I said in my letter, the percentage that it has been closed in the past is, what, 2 or 3 days a year, which is only 1% of the total year. And for 99% of the rest of the time, for the residents to be inconvenienced is not on. So we recommend that the road should go both ways. The second point is the heritage nature of this, which I've also pointed out to you about Warrakowie, the homestead that was there, and Warrakowie Road, that when we planned the cultural centre, it was important to have those heritage links, not only to the Millam Street, which is the Hamilton backwards or a mixture but also the Warakawi homestead, which was quite significant. And at that point of time, in the year 2000, the landowners around that area, namely Westfield and several other owners besides the council, actually signed an agreement, a land agreement, where they actually guaranteed that, that we could cross each other's property, namely Warakawi Way, which is the dual road, the tree line road in front of Bunnings, running across the car park area. And that's Warakawi Way. And to cut that off altogether is just not on, not only for heritage reasons, but also for the roads, for the agreements that the landowners had before. The third and last point, which I like to point out to you, is about the crossing, the road crossing. There's money set aside from Cycling Australia for crossings. And the proposal is to put a crossing from the library across the Trot Grove, across Diagonal Road. If you actually walk that, it's very obvious that the cars turn, come around the corner very quickly. So even if it's a pedestrian activated lights, the cars would come across that crossing very quickly. And as I pointed out to you, the majority of the people, 80% of them, are heading from the cultural centre down to the station. The rest of the 20% are the residents which are moving around there. I can't, as a resident here of 10 years, cannot see the need for a crossing other than the safety point where it is now on that curve.
Mr. Watts.
Yes.
Your 5 minutes has expired, so I hope
All I want to say is thank you for listening to me. And please do not block the roads. Do not lock the roads. And we don't really require a crossing.
Thanks for the summary. And of course, look out on the council agenda for when the consultation comes back in relation to the plaza.
It'll be discussed
at council. I'm sure you'll note it with interest. Thank you and best wishes.
Thank you for that. And good night, councillors. Good luck.
Councillors, I thought it was a rather lucid deputation and therefore no questions really required. And plus, there will be that opportunity for members to discuss and ask questions when the matter comes back shortly with a full consultation report anyway. So let's keep going. Would someone like to move for confirmation of the minutes of the last general council meeting? Moved Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Masika. All those in favour? It's carried unanimously. Thank you. Would someone like to confirm minutes of the Finance and Audit Committee held in August? Moved Councillor Duncan, seconded Councillor Schilling. All those in favour? Gets all those yes, carried unanimously. Thank you. And so we go to Messines Avenue Streetscape Project on page 33. I'll look to Councillor Mason.
Sorry, I just can't unmute there. Look, I'd like to move option two with a small amendment to change where it says 54 car parks. I'd like to make that approximately 54 car parks. Because as outlined in the report, the construction may be influenced because of the tree root flares. So if it was not to have 54 parks, I can see how that might come back. But this is quite a difficult one. I understand I acknowledge the history of the trees and the avenue itself and the sustainability of the trees. But on the other hand, I'm also aware that the car parking is very important to the local businesses. And I feel that if we weren't to put extra car parks in, that could mean that cars are going to illegally park on the garden beds or where they shouldn't be. So I think this probably would be the best option to make everything work. The trees will be happier, the employees will be happier. So I think this is the best option.
Thank you, Councillor Mason. Now, before I ask for a seconder, I just want to check with staff, whether it be Mr. Lyons or Mr. Allen. Councillor Mason suggesting an approximate number of car parks rather than a specific number, but I note that the recommended motion for option two doesn't actually specify a number. So can we have an assurance from staff that the understanding is that the precise number of car parks will somewhat depend on tree routes, et cetera? Happy with a yes.
Through the chair, Councillor Mason gets her text from page 35, which does specify the number of parks. We are very happy to either for you to accept that we would do our best to adhere to that or to insert the wording into the motion. Either way, we'll be doing our best to approximately get that number of car parks.
Well, my understanding is that if you haven't got it specified in the motion, then we'll just assume that staff will be doing their best and it will be approximate depending on achieving the balance between car parks and health of the trees. I think that's what I take from what you're saying, Mr. Lyons, thank you. All right, I'll ask for a seconder, Councillor Masika.
Thanks, Your Worship. I'd like to second the motion as being moved by Councillor Mason. And I understand that there is a compelling two different needs. One, to look up the community in terms of commemoration of those who fought for World War I and also the business sector. And looking up option two probably give us the balance between the two sides. Although the life of the trees will be impacted in somehow, but also the will address the economic needs from the business sector. So if there's no objection from the council members, I would like to move a second option too.
Thank you. Any speakers against? Councillor Telfer.
It is hard to balance the economic presence against the past, but that avenue of trees, of 40 trees that were actually planted in 1917, are important as an honour row of trees. And they would have better health with option one. So I am really quite vexed by option two. It was only in 2009 that council decided that cars could be parked under the trees, and the damage has been done. The trees deteriorated, they got the English elm disease, they had to be treated at great cost by council. They are important and there are other options. It is possible to develop on the western side, the other side of the Edwardstown station, car parking, which could be formalised. There are many Aleppo pines there. There are at least three rows. There could be a significant stand there of Aleppo pines that keep up that heritage or story, but they're not as important as the English elm trees that are now 104 years old. It seems to me that the argument that is there that businesses can ask for 20 car parks or 30 car parks and therefore we provide them on the street starts a strange precedent for the rest of the city. Are Coins, Toyota and every other dealer going to ask for council car parks for their convenience in the street? It seems important to have a permit on those for 2 hours or 3 hours so that they're used purposely for those people that are coming and going to the businesses rather than workers shopping all day, leaving their car parked to catch the train to town or whatever. So I believe that option one is a better option and I hope that if this fails, we can get option one up.
Thank you, Councillor Telfer. Any other speakers in favour? Then I'll just ask Councillor Mason to reply to close the debate. Sorry, that was that no further comment, Councillor? I just wasn't sure because of the technology. So I'll ask for a show of hands. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. I find that the vote is tied, and this is a matter where I've already given the matter some serious consideration. With respect to Councillor Telfer's passionate commitment to preservation of the trees and their historic value, I reckon that if we were making the same decision when the car parks were put in, it might be a different decision. And just today, I was speaking with Mr. Lyons, reflecting on the new transport plan, which calls for a parking plan across the city. And that's what we need to do, have the criteria so whenever these decisions come up, matters like heritage as well as business concerns can be taken into account in a consistent and rational manner. In this particular matter, I'm comforted somewhat by the fact that the Arborist report does put forward either options one or two as being acceptable in terms of the tree health. So although I acknowledge that option one would be the best option for the tree health, I reckon option two does strike a reasonable balance. So I will be voting in the affirmative. And so the motion is carried. And we can move on to the next one. Yes, we haven't moved on. So Councillor Hull, you're calling a division?
Yes, thank you.
All those in favour. I'll just ask for another show of hands, given that we've got some members online. So those in favour, please raise your hand. Those in favour are Councillors Mason, Asika, Pryor, Hutchinson, Schilling and Duncan. Those against, please raise your hand. They are Councillors Valescu, Clancy, Hull, Telfer, Gard and Crossland. The Mayor casts a vote in the affirmative, so the motion is carried on the division. Thank you. So we move on to the Lander Road Young Street Junction upgrade. At last, some funding to finish this job. Councillor Schilling.
Happy to move as printed. This is one that Councillor Duncan and myself have raised with staff many times. It's been constant, rightly raised by residents to us and supportive of this motion to finally get this nuisance intersection in our ward rectified.
Seconded, Councillor Duncan. Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Yeah, that intersection was a problem 30 years ago and it has only got worse. So at last we're getting around to it and we appreciate the extra funding. On page 85, we're now dealing with solar panels for council-owned leased facilities, in particular the Marion Leisure and Fitness Centre. And I'll just note briefly that it was in February 2018, that council resolved to undertake an EOI process. And there was a submission, the process was undertaken a few months ago. The mayor has been sort of prodding with a few emails to try and speed that up, but my emails haven't had a lot of effect. So who would like to move? Councillor Clancy.
Thank you. I'd like to support this motion. The YMCA is currently in process of securing another 5-year lease that will make their investment well worth it. And I think it's an initiative that we should be pursuing more. And even though we've only got one EOI, it'd be a great idea if we actually cold approached every business that would be suitable.
Thank you, Councillor Clancy. Is that seconded? Councillor Valescu?
Yeah, I'd like to support it. I think it's a great idea to have this, but there will be some limitations on our facilities based on when they're used. So we may find that not all places will take it up, but something like YMCA, where they get a lot of use during the day, when it pays off, it will be a good thing for them to invest in.
Anyone speaking against or a question? Yes, Councillor Schilling.
My main question is around once it's paid off, the savings that they'll continue to have after that, will that be passed on to members and people who utilise the facility?
I'll ask for staff comment, but my understanding of it is that we went into this looking for something like a 50-50 deal, in the sense that it would there would be an ultimate benefit to the landlord in reduced electricity costs. I know that the user fees are more than competitive at the Marion Leisure and Fitness Centre as it is, but I don't believe there's been any promise extracted that fees would necessarily be cheaper. We may still have a lease agreement with the YMCA, which benefits us as well as them if they do well. But could staff just clarify, please? That be Mr. Haridis.
Thank you for the question. To the heart of the question, the ongoing benefit of the solar panels and therefore the cost of power to the City of Marion would remain with the City of Marion in the whole. And if we had a new agreement, one, we would ensure that those costs are in line with our policy. And what I would anticipate, given that structure, is our cost burden will remain low and any passed on costs will also be lower because that will be offset by the solar gains.
Councillor Schilling, content? No one's speaking. Councillor Hull?
Another question, Mr. Mayor. There was a recent announcement by the state government there's a possible charge on exporting power into the grid. Now, that applies to all of us domestically as well. I'm just wondering how that will impact on this and all our other investments in Marion. And is this, and depending on the answer, is this a trigger for us to actually explore the battery technology even further, where we can use the power on site rather than exporting it?
I'm not sure that we do sell back to the grid, but I'd be very happy to hear that we do. Who could answer that at the moment? Mr. Haridis.
Through the chair, with regard to the first part of the question, we're yet to see confirmed numbers of any changes to the tariffs or prices to any part of the consuming community. So an activity for administration would then be to assess the cost impact depending on what the increases are. So that's something we can monitor and come back. With regard to the second point, battery technology exploration, the extension of that would then be one of the dynamics that's been an issue that we've reported here previously is it hasn't stacked up to date against usage profiles and cost. That may tip the balance and that would be part of future considerations as well.
So how?
Your question, not mine, as to whether Marion does export energy from any of our sites is a really good question. Is that what's happening now?
I'm personally not in a position to be able to answer that one conclusively. I'm not sure if we have staff that can, otherwise we can take that on notice.
Sounds like that would be a question on notice. But it's not essential, I would suggest, to resolving the motion before us. Councillor Valescu has a question, perhaps?
Yeah. Isn't it better that we don't export it and actually use the electricity?
I think we're starting to go down a rabbit hole here, but any staff wish to answer?
Thank you for the question. All I'd say on that is we would look to ensure that all consumption is localised and we get the maximum benefit, and it would basically be if we're generating above our use, where exportation would be then a consideration.
That's my understanding, that export back into the grid only happens once you've used up as much as you can. There's no point exporting it for much less than your bill for the electricity you're using. So hopefully that answers that question. If there's nothing further, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we're on to we'll take them separately, but the two statements of intent, first in relation to the southern suburbs and secondly in relation to the urban corridor. A question I did ask before the meeting, but I think it's worth clarifying in this meeting, is whether these two statements of intent reflect our end point after the housing diversity DPA process, and I'm advised that they are in fact different, maybe the same broad intent, but they're not the same as where we left off. So could I just have one of our staff explain that, please? And indeed our opportunity and the community's opportunity to influence the outcome. Thanks.
Thank you for the question. So as detailed in my email, the broad intent of both the code amendments before us reflect the intent in the housing diversity DPA part two, it ended up being for the urban corridor and the southern suburbs. There are some subtle differences though. Under the new comprehensive changes under the planning and design code, there are now more options and variations of a corridor zone for the urban corridor, as well as for the southern portion. Council initially consulted on a single layer, a policy across the hills areas in the south, and post consultation submitted to the minister a line essentially where one side a certain criteria applied and the other side different criteria applied. That was ultimately rejected by the minister at that time. So the way forward for that proposal is to go back to a broad brush, single approach, uniform policy across that area. However, with a policy nuance of adding a third gradient category that should balance out the development opportunities in the south, which is the original intent proposed by that policy. So the second part of your question, Mayor, through this initial stage is basically the approval from the minister for us to proceed with the code amendment, that really intent to proceed. From there, staff will draft up the proposed code amendment for consultation, which would come back to preferably the Planning Development Committee before coming to council to be approved for consultation. So there will be an element of consultation and the community will have a chance to provide input at that time.
Thank you. I just wanted that clarified for all members. So just dealing with the Southern Suburbs DPA, moved to Councillor Crossland. Speaks for itself. Was that seconded? Councillor Duncan? Anyone speaking against? Questions? Councillor Vlescu.
Yeah, as I've got a property in one of those areas, I'm just wondering if I have a conflict and whether we need to separate the voting like we did with the policy we had in the previous term.
So the Mayor's view is that the substantial part of the community exemption applies, because we're talking about changes that would literally affect thousands of homes. Councillor Schilling has chosen to register a perceived conflict of interest and to stay in the room for this item. Would you like, Councillor Vlescu, is that enough guidance, or would you like to hear from the governance manager about a conflict of interest?
Well, yeah, look, I would like to get that advice. At least that's on the record. And then I can declare it conceived or leave.
Yep. Ms. McKenzie?
Through the chair, the mayor is correct in that the substantial class provisions would apply.
If I can just have a perceived conflict of interest, but have a substantive class, I'll stay.
Right. So just checking, Ms. McKenzie, you have enough information to record that appropriately with the nature of the interest. Thank you. Now, if there's nothing more, I can put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Sorry, I didn't see everyone vote. I'll just have to ask it again. Everyone in favour, please raise your hand. That is carried unanimously. Thank you. As you know, we have to record who votes which way when there is a perceived conflict of interest. Urban Corridor, Marion Road Amendment. And again, bear in mind the explanation Mr. Della Coombs has given. Councillor Telfer.
I'll move as per the recommendation. We had done so much work towards this. There were some minor little issues along the way that changed it getting across the line before the planning development code came in. So we look forward to this being sorted out by this procedure.
Thank you. Seconded Councillor Hutchinson. Any speakers against? Questions, Councillor Gard?
Yes, it's a long time since we first discussed the plan for the plan. And I was just wanting to refresh my memory. I'm not sure whether it even landed in my memory in the first place. The reason that we, our cutoff for that corridor is at the point where the Sturt Creek crosses Marion Road, because there's quite a bit of commerce south of that. I just can't remember the argument.
Well, I'll let Mr. Della Coombs answer, but I do recall that the sticking point was that after the consultation period, council recognised that there were a few properties around the top of Finnis Street near Alowin Avenue, which ought to have had been addressed in our proposal. And the minister thought that there should be further consultation before proceeding. But Mr. Della Coombs has highlighted that, in fact, there are now probably more options than there were before in terms of zoning, hence the reason to have another look at it. But in terms of how far it goes, does it go right down to South Road, or is it up near the Sturt River or Sturt Road, Mr. Della Coombs?
Thank you. Through the chair, to respond to the council's query, I've been advised the reason it was initially given the location it was is due to the large number of industrial properties in that location that would be unlikely to be developed for the purposes of that zone.
Sorry, does that answer the question? How far, in terms of what we're looking at for a potential review, how far south along Marion Road are we going?
It is the Sturt River, through the chair.
Oh, thank you. That answers that question. Councillor Prime.
When we looked at this zone in the past, this was a part of a trade-off for reducing density in our suburbs, as we might recall through the last term of council. This is a zone which provides a much greater density as we'd like along our transport corridors, and that was the whole intent of this. I would assume, actually, no, I'm going to ask, is there going to be a proposal to reduce the density in the suburbs, which is what the sort of trade-off for this area was? So are we going to initiate a code amendment for reduction of density in our suburbs to go hand in hand with this increase of density on our main roads?
Answer no, but Mr. Della Coombs, could you answer the question, please?
Thank you, through the chair. That would be a decision of council. Council would be more than welcome to propose a further code amendment. Council did spend significant effort during the planning and design code consultation period to address increased densities in locations that we found less desirable, particularly those that were approved only months before the code transitioned in the initial housing diversity DPA.
So Councillor Pryor, you bring something along. It was a delightful way to spend a couple of years in the last term, and why not do it again?
Well, they do say that doing the same thing and expecting a different result is definition of insanity.
I'll leave that to the scientists. Now, Councillor Hull.
Just returning to Councillor Gard's question, it's a very good one. It pulls up at the Sturt River. Now, through you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Mayor, can I get an indication from staff that everything south of the Sturt River on Marion Road is zoned and tickety-boo as it should be? And the other question I have is, given that we've got a major stakeholder in that precinct on the eastern side, would we be perceived as having a conflict of interest as an agency, given that we own city services and the vacant land alongside it?
Well, we're a long way off determining. Oh, sorry, Mr. Delacombs, would you answer that, please?
Through the chair, the only parts that we're proposing in this are in accordance with the previous housing diversity areas part two. If we get approval from the minister to proceed with this, we'll do a more detailed analysis of the zoning south of the Sturt River for Marion Road. As to the question on whether council would have an interest, I don't believe that would be a conflict. I believe the other aforementioned caveats would apply.
So, Mr. Delacombs, just picking up the reference to Sturt River, why is it that we're only looking as far south as Sturt River in terms of potential rezoning? Jamal Hewish.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When we started with the Housing Diversity DPA, we actually went from, I think it was Sturt Road, all the way up to Crossroads. That's what we were looking at initially. And that was taking into consideration because there were some residential housing just north of the Sturt Road intersection on Marion Road, but it was considered that there wasn't enough there to actually warrant actually taking it any further. It was mainly because the uses, as we were saying before, are generally industrial uses, and what we were looking at for Marion Road was like a mixed use type use, and it wasn't considered appropriate for those industrial uses to be used for mixed use as well. It was a decision made by council that the Sturt Creek just seemed to be the right border to actually start the urban corridor, Sturt Creek North.
All right. I'm just mindful of the fact that between, well, north of Sturt Road up to Finnis Street on the western side of Marion Road, there are a number of residences where there are small businesses operating. So it's taken on a slightly commercial feel anyway. And I don't know if it's up to any other councillors if they have a view on it.
Yeah, through the chair.
It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to review the area.
Yeah, through the chair, there's no reason why we can't relook at it again this time. It's just, I guess we've started from where we finished previously, but things have changed somewhat over the last few years, so there's no reason why we can't actually look further south and look at those other areas as well.
Well, it's been moved and seconded. Mover or seconder, have any view on that? Councillor Telfer.
I was mindful of the amount of industrial zoning south of Sturt Road, but it would be possible to look at those houses on the western side in between the industrial areas. So we could amend what we've put up to make it clear that we were going from Cross Road all the way to Sturt Road and tidy up any western side houses that are between Sturt Road and the Sturt River. Probably it's not going to change things greatly, but we can amend that. I will just quickly look at the words to see how we need to.
If councillors are interested, one could tack on the end of the sentence, comma, amended to include consideration of the Marion Road corridor as far south as Sturt Road.
Yes, I'd accept that wording.
I mention it just because councillors have raised those questions, and as I say, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. So why not have a slightly broader scope rather than get into a situation again where somebody might come out through a consultation and say, why didn't you ask me? I'm just near Sturt Road. And then the minister say, well, you can't include that. It wasn't in the statement of intent. Rather a bit broader than a bit narrow. That's what I'm thinking. So if mover and seconder are happy to move that way with that wording, I'll just go to Councillor Pryor. Is this speaking in opposition?
No, this is just asking a question about the rest of right. Marion Road up to, I think it's the South Road intersection.
Yes, I mean,
one side is not.
Certainly the eastern side's taken care of effectively.
Yeah.
On the western side, you've got one small neighbourhood centre, which I think will come, which has been considered as part of a review of smaller urban centres in the Planning and Development Committee, if I'm Mr. Melhewish, looking at you.
Through the chair, I believe we did look at it. It isn't one of the ones that we've decided to make any changes to. It was certainly considered when we did the housing diversity DPI as well.
That's right. Yeah. And the residential housing probably, and that stretch, Sturt Road to the expressway, is not really given to
the, I believe there's a service zone. there's a service line down there, so yeah, it wasn't the most appropriate consideration.
Doesn't jump out as a potential alternative zoning. Councillor
Pryor? Not really, I agree, but I mean, you're talking about the consideration here, and I think we should consider it because it's obviously a continuation of the Marion Road corridor. So we may find that when we consider it, we say exactly that this is not suitable because
of those reasons. Mover and seconder, do you want to exchange Sturt Road for Southern Expressway? I'm getting a nod of the head from one councillor. No. Very well. Is there anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. Mr. Mulhewish is offering advice.
It is a bit of advice, or with the change in motion, what we'll have to do is actually change the document slightly to actually include the Marion Road down to Sturt Road. At the moment, I think we may have a map in there that actually says that it goes from the Sturt Creek up to Crossroads. It's just a matter of changing a couple of quick things to before it gets signed off.
And indeed, that the word amended, I would suggest, covers exactly that.
Okay, thank you.
That's understood. Thank you. So I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. All right, on to the Audit Committee member for SWARA. I've got a motion. I always think these matters should be considered in confidence, but Councillor Schilling, you're keen to move as printed?
Moving as printed.
Thank you, Councillor Schilling, and for your brief contribution. Seconded, Councillor Duncan. Councillor Gard. Thank you for drawing that to my attention, Councillor Duncan. Seconded Councillor Gard. Any discussion or procedural motions? No. Then we'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. Funding support for the District Council of Loxton Wakery litigation. Now, must admit, I'm not usually a fan of these things, but having looked at the legal issues facing this small country council, it wouldn't be hard to have a lot of sympathy for them in the way their EBA is being interpreted. But up to you, members, who would like to? Councillor Clancy? Yes.
So we can only support this motion if it has significant, if it's of a significant support importance across local government. So my question to Mr. Lyons is, how would this affect, a decision around this affect our workers, and what's the current setup with PDOs and the hours that our field staff work?
Oh. Mr. Lyons.
Through the chair, with respect, would you grant me a minute just to get more conversant with this report?
Perhaps Mr. Harrison could offer some advice while we're waiting. Thank you.
So thank you, through the chair. So just to be clear, just in case there is any uncertainty about the application of this, it relates to employees that work condensed weeks or fortnights, and those that would ordinarily have an RDO structured on a Monday, whereby we have many public holidays of the nine fall on a Monday. My understanding through briefings is that if the Monday is a public holiday and it falls on what would be your RDO, you still get paid for not working that day, if you like, and then your RDO becomes the Tuesday, the following day after that. The challenge here is with compressed weeks, it means that you actually work more hours per day, and hence you get paid more hours per day, up to 9.6 hours through the compressed week calculations. The council has determined that it is only going to make a payment for what would routinely be a full day if it was of a 10-day fortnight, hence 7.6 hours per day times by the 10 days. We have compressed weeks and we have people working extended timeframes. I've actually sought clarification today. I haven't got the answer as of this moment as to how we are interpreting such an award. What I can say is the early information I had at lunchtime today was that we don't have in our EA expressed explicitly how much will be paid for how many hours will be worked if a public holiday falls on an RDO. We are of the view that the council in question here, Loxton, actually has more explicit detail within their award, and hence they've made an interpretation based on the information provided within the award. Hopefully that hasn't confused anybody. So I'm getting further information as of today to see how we're actually interpreting our award, which appears to be less explicit than the award which has been interpreted in the council, which is seeking support through the litigation process.
Just a question, Mr. Harrison, do we mean same award, different EBA?
Yes, that's right.
All right. That raises the question whether we should defer consideration of the item. But Councillor Gard, you had a question? Thank you for pointing out that Councillor Crossland has a question. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. I know we looked at this a few years ago and I thought that we didn't go towards for certain groups 4-hour working week. Can you just tell me how many we do have on a 4-day working week, and would having them work Monday to Thursday make any difference in the future?
So through the chair, I might have to defer to Mr. Lyons, because I understand we have two different groups who are working two different arrangements, and they do vary in the hours and the minutes that they actually work per day and when their RDOs are structured. So I might, if I can through the chair, just defer that to Mr. Lyons, who may have that information at his fingertips.
Mr. Lyons.
Through the chair, with regard to our outdoor staff, there's roughly 90 outdoor staff, and roughly half of them would do a 9-day fortnight and half of them would do an 8-day fortnight, so roughly 45. And the 9-day fortnights all start and finish at the same time, and the 8 days as well, but we try and stagger the 8-day fortnight so that we do have coverage over the 5-day working week.
Any other questions? Councillor Gard.
Yeah, without disputing the merit or otherwise of Loxton Wakery's position, I just wanted to know generally whether the LGA would normally fund for such proceedings, not necessarily this exact type of proceeding, but those sorts of administrative stroke. Well, for example,
Councillor Gard,
union type proceedings.
A very good question.
Yeah.
So the LGA have a litigation funding policy, and the policy is essentially that if they think it's worthwhile, to ask the other councils to fund it. Now, an alternative rapidly comes to mind, that the LGA could have their own litigation fund, which could, you know, perhaps be 1% of council's membership fees or something, like a litigation assistance fund or an insurance policy in a way, so that when these problems come up, the LGA could decide if it's worthwhile, just fund it. Don't give every council in South Australia a motion to debate. However, this is the way the LGA does it. Yes, Councillor Hull.
Procedural motion, Mr. Mayor, that this matter lie on the table until such times the CEO gathers further and better particulars.
Yes, that's acceptable. Councillors Schilling seconds. Without further debate, is that carried? I'll put that to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against? Carried by majority. So we'll leave it on the table until we have further information, which probably won't be long. So on page 206, Prudential Management Policy. Now, it has been trimmed down, I'm glad to say. I'd ask our governance manager, Ms. McKenzie, what does the policy add that isn't prescribed by the law anyway?
Through the chair, not too much. This is a policy that is required by the legislation, so there is a fair bit of repeat in here. What we have tried to do is make it so it has a policy intent, and it's sitting at a very high level with the procedural elements being removed and placed in a procedure.
Excellent, thank you. Would someone like to move accordingly to adopt the policy? Councillor Hutchinson, seconded Councillor Telfer. If there are no questions, Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, with this policy, is there an opportunity for a trigger for once a report's been done and it goes to our Finance and Audit Committee, that with a major project, that there's some significant development with that major project, whatever that might be, significant development, that there'd be a trigger for it to return to the audit committee, to actually have them reassess it, and then to actually endorse it with all the information that's at hand at the time?
I'll ask Ms. McKenzie to respond. It's probably up to the committee what they...
Through the chair, it's not in the policy, but it has been our standard practice of when circumstances change that it goes back to audit committee and then they reconsider the matter and it comes through to council.
I mean, I'm sure audit committee would be interested in substantive changes, but it is up to staff to then send it back. Otherwise, the audit committee won't know there's been a change. Councillor Hull, anything?
I'm wondering how the staff would know that there should be a trigger. If it's not in the policy.
Ms. McKenzie.
Through the chair, with prudential management reports, the staff are very involved in the detail of it and they are aware of when there is a substantial change. To my understanding so far, the process has always been when there's been changes and it changes the content or the risks, then they bring it back through finance and audit. We have the procedure as well, and the procedure has the details in there about when it goes to audit committee.
All right. So unless there's going to be something else, someone want to move accordingly? Already done that? Yeah. Oh, excellent. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. All right, page 210, policies for rescission. That's what we like to see. Councillor Telfer moved.
Yes, I'll move as written.
And seconded Councillor Crossland. All those in favour? Yes, that is unanimous. Thank you. So just waiting on the technology again there. That's fine. Now, local government reform on page 229, this is something of a formality in the sense that we're just moving the policy to a different place within our documentation. Someone like to move that way? Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Hutchinson, or enthusiastically, all those in favour, carried unanimously. Thank you. So we move on to traffic and parking. Thank you. It is a report for noting, basically saying that we have to keep an eye on this, and no doubt there will have to be some traffic studies as the developments take place at Moorfield Racecourse. Councillor Crossland has a question.
So, and I'm not sure we'll get an answer tonight, but the question would be, it already seems from this report that we've identified issues that are going to occur when the development happens. If that's the case, is there a way of getting funding for those problems from the developer in anticipation of all the extra cost on Marion Council once that development is up and running?
Suppose that's a question for Mr. Herides. Thank you.
Thank you for the question, Councillor. As with these in other locations, what we would do is look, once the final design is there, what are those implications, and whether it was through planning mechanisms or infrastructure deeds, that's where we'd look to address those issues and see what the developer should, would, could take on, and what would need to be passed on or met by council. So importantly, as per the report, it was noted that the traffic volumes, whilst they'd still be within the current ranges, wouldn't change the classification of those streets, that there would be increased volumes and it would impact amenities. So those are the things that we'd need to look at pending the final designs that we see.
If we can just help Councillor Crossland pin that down a bit, if the developers said, well, sure, there'll be extra traffic, but we're not entering into a deed. We don't want to pay any extra beyond what we're building and any necessary open space funding. Then we can't force them, can we, or what?
Through the chair, we can't force, but we will look to influence in the strongest way possible.
Councillor Crossland.
So in that case, and maybe you could help me, instead of just noting the report, can we just make a note also that that is something we'd like explored? Because I don't think it's fair that we blindly go along with this, knowing that there's going to be some significant cost to ratepayers down the track and not actually put a bit of effort into trying to reduce those costs.
Fair enough. So if everyone could try and think of some suitable wording, but there are other questions to deal with first. Councillor Gard.
Thank you, Worship. Just in regard to the second last para on the first page of this report, where the term residential amenity or the reduction in residential amenity is predicted, aside from the obvious, much more traffic or significantly more traffic. Are there any other effects on amenity that that could be expected? That's the first question. And the other one is regarding the complexities of the T-junction between Park Terrace and Bray Street, which is not a nice T-junction. I use it quite often. There's curves in Bray Street at that point, etc. Is there expected to be a study even between now and the development just to monitor how much extra use that junction is getting? I think the general population in that area is expanding aside from the predictions from the development.
Who would like to answer? Mr. Haridis?
Yeah, thank you for your questions too. The first point that you raised, Councillor, the traffic assessment done on the DA to which this refers really only predicated the traffic impact amenities, and therefore it's the flows. It did include an intersection study, so it did look at those key intersection points. So purely through that lens, there weren't other amenity impacts that were anticipated. Now, I think this goes in part to Councillor Crossland's question as well. Whilst the DA has gone through, when planning approval and the mechanism through assessment of those proposals goes, those questions around amenity, the nature of the buildings, other impacts that might be seen, get to be reinterrogated in that forum. So I think that addresses that component. With regard to your observation on just aside from the development impacts at particular intersections, that's something that we're happy to take offline and look into and see whether we should be doing an assessment on the basis of just other pressures, and happy to look at that back through committees and also to report back through the relevant ward.
Any other questions, Councillor Duncan?
Mine is an extension of what Tim was talking about. I use that area a lot. It needs to be, an assessment of the intersection for Henry Street onto Bray. There's a lot of traffic already coming from the developments that are already going on in Morfettville, and that does have an impact on that T-junction. But also it does have an impact on Park Terrace as well, because of people trying to turn and getting in and out. If you have more than two cars at the entrance of Henry Street and a bus is coming along Bray, the bus can't get through into Henry Street at all until all of the cars have gone. Also with Park Terrace, if there's cars parked at near the entrance of Park Terrace from Bray Street, there is quite a restriction on the traffic going both ways along that Park Terrace now, and it will be even worse with the development. So there's quite a bit of congestion and things already in that area, so it needs to be investigated a lot more, I think.
Thank you, Councillor Duncan. So quite a bit of detail there. Some matters perhaps for ward briefing for that ward. And Mr. Haridis, how else could these concerns be taken into account which go beyond the impact of the Morfettville DPA?
Thank you, Mayor and Councillor. What makes sense, given one, the proximity of Hendry and Park as T-junctions along Bray, is we'll also just look at where we think other pressure points are along that route and network. It makes sense to connect with the traffic teams as well as our planning teams and just seeing what activity's been there, and then bring that back toward councillors. I would suggest as well, if we find that there's significant issues, that would be coming back to committee or an update to council as a report as well of those findings.
Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I'm ever so glad that I moved the amendment to seek this report. It's been quite revealing. And on page 236, it states that details provided with the DPA included a traffic management assessment report. And then it talks about Anzac Highway and the other side of the racecourse. However, it did not provide any detail on the impact that could be anticipated on adjacent road systems to the east of the site between Park Terrace, Marion Road and Plimpton Park. How could this happen? How could we have a planning approval for this when there was no meaningful traffic management study submitted for the approval process?
I'm not sure that's entirely right. Order, Mr. Haridas.
Thank you for the observation, Councillor. The report does outline that whilst there was a traffic assessment done across the precinct, looking at the development assessment for the future potential of the site, we noted that that area was excluded and a supplementary report was done to look at the traffic movements east. And that's what triggered some intersection assessments and also council administration's view that whilst the thresholds are still within the ranges that are acceptable and won't change the street classifications, that there were impacts to amenity. A further attachment to this report is the communication that council did send in response to that to the state government for their consideration. So that really council's efforts at that time, councillor, did trigger a further view to that particular zone and our responses to that zone. And obviously in the future, once we get the more detailed plans, there are likely to be further traffic investigations once we know what is actually going to be developed at the site.
One other question.
Councillor Hull.
Councillor Gard makes a very good point. There's a number of references in here will result in a noticeable reduction in residential amenity. Now, this should be a real issue for this council.
So, Councillor, you're debating?
No, the question is, how can we actually start as a council to actually negate that comment? Because on 891 a couple of months ago, this was raised with David Bevan, this very issue.
All right, so how can that be negated, Mr. Haridas?
Thank you for the further question. Effectively, in follow-up to my earlier comments, once we receive the plans, the actual development proposal plans for the site and understand if they are consistent with what we've previously seen, if they exacerbate those issues or potentially soften those issues, it will be through the assessment process where those can be challenged.
Now, I've come up with some slightly, Councillor Valescu.
Yes, thank you. I guess there's, I want to preface my question. I think there's a dichotomy between what we want to do and have influence on and what we can actually do. So can we get that information? Could we actually identify what council would like to do, the sort of impact council would like to have, and the actual impact we can have? Because I think it's good to identify that there are limitations, but also to identify the areas where we may be able to have an impact on this issue, on the amenity in the area.
Councillor Valescu, I think Mr. Haridas has largely answered that question in the sense that we can negotiate with the developer, we can't force the developer to assist with traffic infrastructure. We can directly put in traffic amelioration measures, but that is generally at the expense of ratepayers. So that's in terms of what we can or can't do. Perhaps before further questions, the Mayor could just throw in some alternative wording based on discussion, and there might be further questions or discussion after that, even a mover. So Council, one, notes the report. Two, will endeavour to minimise loss of amenity to existing residents in negotiations with the developers. Three. Yeah, minimise loss of amenity to existing residents in negotiations with the developers. The developers and residents with the TS. Number three, will seek financial assistance from the developers in respect of any desirable traffic infrastructure improvements. Desirable traffic infrastructure improvements. Now, while members are considering that, Councillor Valescu.
I'm happy to move that. But I'd like to add that we also approach the state government and that further information be provided exactly identifying what we would like to do, the sort of impact we want to have and what we can. I think that's important so people don't have unreasonable expectations about how council can impact it.
Well, at the moment, we don't know what we want to do because we don't know what the traffic impact will be exactly. Could that be a question on notice, that part, Councillor Valescu?
So that's fine. That's all right.
Further information can come back as to what can or can't be extracted from developers in such circumstances. So that's been moved. Councillor Hull, you're suggesting additional wording, are you?
I've got a question. Desired character statement. The council wanted to fall back on that, but the code.
Sorry, Councillor. That's about something else. So I'll just go with the order of debate. Councillor Valescu's moved the motion. Did you want to speak further to it, Councillor Valescu?
Look, I'd like to thank all the members for taking an interest in this area. It is going to cause a lot of problems. The way to avoid it is not actually have the development, but we're going to get it. So let's work with the people to get the most out of it, and hopefully state government can come in and assist us as well. We'll see what happens. I think the thresholds for the development are a lot higher than what the community would like as far as the impact. So, we may not be happy with the allowable traffic and the traffic issues, but they may be allowed as such. And I think that's important that we let the community know that there are those limitations when that information becomes available.
Thank you. Is that seconded? Councillor Clancy, anything to add? Then anyone against? Then we put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hands. That is carried unanimously. Thank you. So we're on to Land Road speed limit, I think. So Councillor Schilling.
Thank you, Worship. Move as printed. I think this is a fairly self-explanatory motion. Earlier this year, Councillor Duncan and myself were both contacted by numerous residents. I was approached by many residents after the Berrimah Road incident, which occurred earlier in the year, relating to speed along Lander Road, especially because a large chunk of Lander Road, especially from Patpa Drive through to South Road, is residential, both sides of the road, and were asking whether the speed could be dropped to 50 k's an hour, as it is on other suburban roads. I note in the staff comments with the Lander Road, Candy Road, South Road intersection upgrade, we've seen about up to 25% volume traffic increase on Lander Road, about 10,000 cars a day. Now, to put that in perspective, that's nearly half of what goes down Flagstaff Road every day. So it's a large amount of traffic. And dropping it to 50 would support the community a lot better. Especially on that intersection that we've just funded, which is now Lander Road and Young Street, that'll support there. But also, members, that other sub-arterial roads in the city of Marion, Raglan Avenue, Bray Street, Cliff Street and Winifred Avenue are all 50, and they are sub-arterial roads as well. And Lander is classed as a sub-arterial road, has more traffic, but is classed as a 60. And this would support the community.
Is that seconded, Councillor Duncan? Nothing, anything to add? Then any opposition? Got some questions? Councillor Gard, then Councillor Hull.
Yes, it's just one a little bit out of left field, Your Worship. Just by way of comparison, we're talking about sub-arterial road comparisons. One that hasn't been mentioned in dispatches is the Cove Road between Hallett Cove and Marino. And I'm interested to know if there has been any study done on accident rates for that road as opposed to Lander Road. I know it's not exactly on topic, but it's relevant.
Yes, can one of the managers advise? Might be something to take on notice. I would have thought both speeds and accident rates in relation to Cove Road and Lander Road, indeed, be a good... Right. So just still a legitimate question on notice from Councillor Gard as a comparator. Councillor Hull, question?
Yeah, just following on again from Councillor Gard. It's a theme tonight, I think. With this particular issue, my experience is when we make decisions, we have data, and the data on the lines that Councillor suggested is the crash rate and the speeds. There doesn't seem to be any data with this report. So I'd like to base my decisions on data. The councillors, the local councillors may well be right, but I think it's reasonable for us to have data.
Just bearing in mind, Councillor, that the motion is to investigate and consult with the community. So
the data would come back in that report.
That would mean that when it says a report will be brought back, that there would be data and there would be community response brought back. That's my understanding of it. Mr. Lyons is agreeing to that. Well, in reply, I'll come back to you. Just any other debate or questions? No, then Councillor Schilling to speak and close the debate, please.
No worries, thank you, Mayor. In relation to Councillor Hull's point, as councillors, we have seen some traffic data because we've had requests for a variety of other things. We wanted to see the increase after the Lander Road, Candy Road intersection upgrade opened, and there was some speed issues as well. However, this report will bring back further, and that was the intention, that it's to investigate and consult. It doesn't set us in concrete tonight. It brings back a report, so then we can make a decision from there, and I'll put that to the chamber.
Put the motion, all those in favour? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. All right. Now we're up to the cover reports in respect of the confidential issues. I'll just ask first if any member wants to take a different view than expressed in the cover reports. Councillor Clancy, anything to raise?
Yes, I'd like to remove the Westminster Reserve from the confidential list.
All right. So what we'll do, if that's the only one of concern at this point, Councillor Schilling was going to move all of the other cover reports en bloc, and we'll deal with the Westminster one separately. So in respect of those other cover reports, moved Councillor Schilling, seconded Councillor Duncan. Then I'll put the motion, all those in favour, carried unanimously. In respect of having a confidential discussion in relation to Westminster Reserve, perhaps the way to go about this would be, because obviously if there's no motion, it's in the open, but you don't normally need a motion to have it in the open. So if anyone would like to move that it should be a confidential discussion, then we'll test it as a vote and that will resolve that issue. So does anyone want to have a confidential discussion about it? Question from Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Worship. It's a question for governance. And without going into too much detail, I note that part of the resolution of the Westminster Reserve topic is one of the actual motions in there is to make all the material open to the public. So what is going to be the difference if we have the debate in confidence and then have it open to the public if it's passed? And is there anything in the material in the debate that's going to make it difficult to do if we don't go into confidence?
Through the chair, I think this item was essentially put up in confidence so you may consider the legal advice. The legal advice is in there in regards to the contractual side of the agreements, and that is why it has been presented in confidence.
So in that sense, it depends what is debated when we have the debate. Councillor Crossland, did you want to clarify?
I should have added on there at the end. What we are recommending is that the item and the minutes are released afterwards, but giving you an opportunity to consider the legal advice and confidence first. That was the intent.
Crossland.
So it's normal practice to not release legal advice, because if you do release it, it's completely worthless. So if we don't go into confidence, is that legal advice public?
Yes, because you wouldn't have put a confidential order over it.
No, sorry, can I just clarify here to avoid people being at cross purposes? Two distinct concepts: having the debate in confidence or public, which may or may not involve touching on the legal advice. And then there is the question of what to do with the documentation at the end of the debate, whether the advice is kept in confidence, all of the documents kept in confidence, or none of the documents kept in confidence. So you've got a couple of different angles there. And if people are talking about in confidence, I just want to be clear that people are separating out the discussion, which is what this cover report's about, to the documentation, which we'll deal with at the end of the debate. Councillor Crossland, does that help you?
It does. It doesn't help people who might want to talk about the legal advice. A way around it, as a suggestion, would be to actually find out if anyone does want to talk about the legal advice, and if nobody does, then we can just press on regardless.
That's a reasonable suspend standing question. Orders. Because if somebody says, well, yeah, I do want to start talking, questioning the legal advice, etc., Councillor Clancy might have a different view, I don't know. Councillor Telfer, what did you want to add?
Conflict of interest. So if you're going to discuss, I'll come back for the next item.
All right. Not sure if it's necessary at this point, but Councillor Telfer has declared a material conflict of interest as having a residence near the Westminster Reserve and has left the room. So just making sure that's being recorded. Although at this point, we're not discussing the substance of the matter. We're just asking if anyone considers that when the matter is debated, they might wish to delve into the legal advice.
Just one other comment procedurally. If you choose not to go into confidence, what you may wish to do is to resolve to release all the existing confidential orders first, because technically they still have orders on them, which means you wouldn't be able to discuss them in public until those orders have been released.
That's helpful, thank you. But I'm not actually hearing from anybody that they want to discuss what's in the legal advice, which suggests that quite possibly the debate could be had without going into confidence. But, you know, you have to think about the negotiations with Westminster. It may be that we are, just in terms of the procedure, it might be that we deal first with the confidentiality of resolutions up to this point. Because if we don't clear them, then it's not going to be much of a debate if we can't refer to anything that's happened before. Councillor Schilling, your suggestion?
No, I just have a question with regards to the debate. So if we go into confidence and we debate, and then we say it's all public, does that mean what we've debated is public? So everything we've said becomes public?
So that's right.
So why don't we just go into confidence and then release it and then go, well, it's now public and this is what was said, and move on? Because then if someone wants to refer to the legal advice, they can. But then once we've finished it, we make it all public, and I can go to Joe Smith and say, we said this, this, and this, and this, and this, because it's public.
Right. So you're saying that we could have the debate in confidence,
yep,
but at the end of it, apart from releasing any documents, we could also say that the recording, for example, is released. But it won't be recorded if it's in confidence.
But we can say to Joe Smith, I said this, and it's still, it's not confidential. So you can say what was stated in the chamber. It's not like it's got a confidential order over it.
So through the chair, the only thing that has been proposed to be retained is the legal advice. So technically, the debate wouldn't have an order to retain it in confidence over it.
Shall we test this by first going to, as Ms. McKenzie was pointing out, there's the possibility of revoking. It's item one on the second page of the Westminster report. You see there is a motion there to revoke previous confidentiality orders. That's the correct one, Ms. McKenzie, isn't it? So as a precursor to your intention as to how the debate could go, Councillor Clancy, would you like to move that and we'll test the waters that way? Right, so you're moving that way. Did you wish to say any more about it? Then is that seconded? Councillor Schilling, you're seconding. Councillor Crossland.
Sorry, I might have missed something. Can we just make it clear what we're moving and what the impact will be?
Yes. So we're dealing with the written recommendation. I'll read it out in case people can't find it, but it's on the second page of the actual Westminster report. I've got it as page 203 of the agenda, that Council revoke the confidentiality orders pertaining to the reports, minutes and appendices relating to Westminster Reserve that have been considered in confidence by Council, and then that refers to the five General Council meetings. So unless there are speakers against, we'll just go straight to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. It's unanimous. Thank you. So given that there's still a question, does anyone want to move that the debate itself, not the documents, but the discussion should be in confidence? Not hearing any. So that would suggest we could proceed with the Westminster item, but we would do that before we go into other confidential items, because remember we've passed the confidentiality provisions in relation to remaining items. And also we have, technologically, we sort of need to deal with all of them in a block separately at the end. So I think with your leave, it's inevitable that we now proceed to debate that item. And we are dealing with the Westminster Reserve item. And do people have any questions, or do we go into a motion? That's Councillor Crossland.
I'm happy to go with what's listed on the agenda as option one, proceed with the revocation and disposal.
Very well. You wish to speak further?
No, I think the report is quite detailed and self-explanatory, and I think it's probably the best option for council and for the community down there.
Is that seconded? Councillor Masika, wish to speak?
Yes, Your Worship, I'd like to second the motion for the land to be disposed. I know we've discussed it for a while, and that piece of land cannot be made available for other parties to come and buy the commercial value. So, and the Westminster schools happen to use that one for quite a while, and they are keen to continue using it, and it can be disposed in another way. So I would like to second that to be disposed back to the Westminster School College.
Before we go any further, we've had a mover and a seconder, but I noticed that the motion, which does which does speak of sale of the land, doesn't have a price. So Ms. McKenzie, can you explain?
Sorry?
In the motion. I'm just saying that the motion itself, I see, authorises the disposal in accordance with the council resolution made on 22nd September. So that's the price of $5,000 plus costs, which can now be stated publicly. All right, it's that answers my question. Anyone speaking against? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. Now we deal with the confidentiality clause. If you look at, Ms. McKenzie can just check, I'm looking at the right one here, but it's on page 203 of the agenda. It's marked as clause two. So that's keeping attachment 18.2.3, that's the legal advice, confidential, but otherwise the rest of the material is released, the report and so forth. So would someone like to move that way? Councillor Masika, is that seconded? Councillor Schilling, all those in favour? Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we go into a series of confidential items. The first one being to do with Cove Sports and Community Club. I just ask members, I know we have to switch over the technology. How long shall we have a short adjournment? 2 minutes, not less than 2 minutes adjournment. Thank you, members.